Welcome back to Locals to Legends Wrestling Radio. Of course, I'm your host, Gene Jackson. And this morning, it's my pleasure to welcome my guest. He's a former Smoky Mountain Wrestling heavyweight champion, defeating the likes of Jerry the King Lawler to take that title. He's a man who spent a substantial amount of time in WCW. But most importantly, he's the man who wrote the book, Pin Me, Pay Me, Have Boots, Will Travel. And, of course, I'm talking about my guest this morning, Mr. Bobby Blaze. Bobby, how you doing this morning, sir?
Hey, brother, I'm doing great. It sure is a pleasure to be on your show. Thank you for having me on here. I'm doing good.
Good, good. Well, I tell you, we got a lot to cover, and, you know, we'll talk some about your career. But I tell you, there, in recent years, there's been a ton of wrestling books come out. And I read as many of them as I can, and some of them are good, and some of them are just, you know, lackluster. But, you know, I was a fan of yours during your time in Smoky Mountain and followed your career at WCW. And I wanted to, when you first mentioned, I guess probably a year or so ago or more on the book, I definitely kept an eye out to see when you got it ready. And, of course, once the book was published, I purchased it, and man, not just me, but if people go on Amazon, and we'll talk more about where they can go to buy the book, go and read the reviews. Excellent reviews on the book, and it just really well written, and really feel like the reader is taken on your career journey in professional wrestling. Tell us a little bit about what all went into that.
Well, first of all, thank you very much for a kind compliment. The book is getting really good rave reviews. I'm real appreciative of that. I appreciate you taking the time to read it, certainly, and all the fans. I had been working on the book for about 4.5-5 years, to be honest with you. I really upped it in the last year. I had just taken some notes, and it seemed like I'd be somewhere here or there, and I didn't realize, you know, people really, they'd say, hey, Bobby, have you met someone? And they'd mention a name, you know, or who did you beat, or you know, who did you actually wrestle, or someone like, hey, you know, and I'd end up telling them a little brief story or make someone laugh, you know, or I'd be at a local show somewhere and run into a couple of boys that I may have known or some up-and-comers, and I always try to, you know, to be respectful of everyone that I met, and I'd share a little story with them, and I realized that, that, you know, people actually did want to hear, you know, what I had to say, so I started, you know, taking some notes, like I said. And I had a projected date of September of 2013 to get it done by. And during that time, you know, I lost both parents in about an 18-month period. You know, I went through a lot of different things physically and mentally and emotionally for me. And you know, I got sidetracked here and there, writer's block, if you will. But basically, I just wrote down, you know, all the places I've been, and I wrote the book myself. You know, I didn't have a ghostwriter or anything. It's in my words. And I wanted to write it in a way that it'd be just like if you and I was riding to a show that evening, or we was after a show and we was heading to the, you know, out to a club or to a bar or to a restaurant. And I just wanted to be like, you know, we're right there in the seat talking to each other. And I think that's what come across in the book is a lot of people tell me, like, man, it's like I was right there with you when you was telling that story about, you know, the midgets or about the time you wrestled Lawler or whatever the story was. So, you know, a lot went into it, and I just kind of told it like it was. I started off just like anyone else. I was a big fan of professional wrestling, and I state that in the book. You know, I still am. I don't watch a lot of wrestling on TV nowadays, only because I feel like I really like professional wrestling. I'm not really big into sports entertainment. And that's my choice, and that's people's choice. And I follow a lot of local independent wrestlers and independent circuits, and I think professional wrestling is still out there today. It's just not on national TV. And that's kind of what I wanted to get across in the book is that, you know, hey, everyone that's out there following their dream, if I can be of any help to them by if they read the book and they say, wow, you know, this is what it takes to really, you know, be a true professional, or, you know, maybe it doesn't matter if I win or lose, I'm going to do my best for this promotion I'm in, and, you know, pin me, pay me, I'll go to the next town, I have my boots, I'll travel. And I was fortunate enough to work when I broke in some of the territories, and that's what's lacking nowadays in professional wrestling. There's not a lot of places for the boys to go to work, but if they're willing to get out there, there's places they can find, and they can get that experience and have fun, you know, and that's what it's all about, because the fans, I always felt like the fans, because I was a fan, no one wants to pay to see themselves, and I tell people that nowadays, and that's what I try to tell the people in the book, was, you know, be someone different, you know, be yourself, but be someone different when you're in a ring. Perform as hard as you can, as best as you can, and always work for your match and work for the card and not your ego. And that's where I got the pin me, pay me come from, was that was my attitude, is I'm going to do the best I can, have the best match I can, win, lose, or draw. You know, I'm going to do my best. And that's kind of what the perspective I took into wrestling. That's kind of the perspective I have now. And that's what I got across in the book was, you know, we're going to have a good career. We're going to bust our butt and do our very best. But along the way, you know, what it amounts to is I want the fans to be entertained by the book. I want to be entertained by my matches. And like I had, you know, put in the book there, first you learn to wrestle, then you learn to make money. And, you know, it takes an average guy about 6 to 7 years to really hone his skills and really hone his skills, rather, and start making some money at this business. And, that's about what it took me. And, you know, it's not always about the money. I stated that in a book when I was in WCW. I was making great money, but if you're not really happy sometimes, you know, with the ups and downs of being there, you know, getting go on Nitro 10 minutes before they go live and then get jerked and not going on live and having to wait another week to debut or whatever it is, you know, it's frustrating, but it's a job like anything else. I felt like I'd done it to the best of my ability of what I had to work with. And I loved every minute of it, you know. Whether I was making $50 one night or $500 another night, I always tried to do my very best in the ring.
Well, I think you were very successful at what you mentioned before about it, the book coming off as if they were riding in the car with you from town to town, because I think something your book did very well that I don't know that I've found a book to do since Mick Foley's first book. I think one of the reasons that he got over as well as he did was the book, that people read that book and you come away from it feeling like, you know Mick Foley, like your friends, and you have more of an attachment to him than you had before. And I think a lot of people reading your book come away from it feeling like they know you, feeling like they've traveled with you and went on that journey with you. The people you've communicated with since putting the book out, do you get a lot of that? Do you feel, you know, that there's kind of a connection with fans that wasn't there before?
Yes.
After reading your book?
Yes, there is, actually, and that's a good point. I knew what you were going to say when you mentioned Mick Foley's book, because like yourself, you mentioned that you read a lot of the wrestler's books, and I have, too. I've read quite a few of them. I'm really big into reading, and I think it's one of the true gifts if you learn to read at an early age. I just love reading, and I've read several of them, and the thing is, there's some that are really good, and some are great, and some, you know, like you said, I think you used the word lackluster, I agree, but one of the first ones I read was Mick Foley's, and I was actually in Japan, and I read a lot of books when I was overseas, you know, and I read his first book overseas, and that was a feeling I got when I had met Mick several times, you know, throughout my career. He was in Smoky Mountain for a couple weeks there, and then we'd done some independents there at one time, for Bobby Fulton and some independents, you know. And he was a super guy. I really and liked him personally. And it was more of a professional, you know, meeting. But when I read his book, I did that too. I had that feeling of and I really kind of know this guy a little bit better. And that's what I did too. I kind of put myself out there. And so to answer your question, yeah, I hope when someone reads the book, they feel like, you know, hey, man, I'm just sitting here in a car riding to the next town with Bobby Blaze. He's telling me a funny story about midgets, or he's telling me about, you know, this or that. And when they read the book, I just talked to a young lady the other day. She gave me a call, and she's like, she had been a fan for over 20 years in wrestling, and she was talking about some of the guys in the old NWA and some of the guys I happen to know. And that was the thing. She was like, man, I didn't know you knew this guy. And she didn't realize how many people I'd met during my career. And she's a friend of mine. Like I said, she had just called me out of the blue. And I didn't realize what a big fan she was. But she really felt like, you know, she got to know me a little better through that book and understand me a little bit better. And she really enjoyed the stories. And then I had William Regal. You know, I read his book. And I had two guys that I work with some. On a local independent show, and they came to me and they was like, man, you need to read this book. And this was after they read mine, you know, Pin Me, Pay Me. And I was like, sure, you know, one of them had worked at Amazon, and he had actually bought that Steve Regal book. And I read it. This was after my book came out, and they asked me what I thought about it, of course, a couple weeks later. And they said, good thing you didn't read that before your book came out. And I said, no, I didn't. I said, I can't believe that he shares some of the stories that I share. You know, we had some of the similar experiences when I was in England, some of the experiences with Harlem Heat, you know, with the NASCAR story. There's just so many things that were coincidental, and I felt like, you know, that's what I wanted people to take away from it. To answer your question was, hey, I got to know Bobby Blaze, the wrestler. I got to know Bobby Blaze, the person, and Bobby Blaze, the man, you know, like, wow, this guy. You know, yeah, I put myself out there, but that was my intention, was to let people know, you know, this is the kind of life I led, and I want to share some stories with them. And I have a bunch more, but I put the select ones in there that I felt like people would really relate to the most and have fun with, you know. So, yeah, there's people that come up to me, and they'll talk to me or call me, or they'll write me on Facebook, and I was like, man, I really liked your book. I really felt like I got to know you a whole lot better. Well, I appreciate what you've done for the business, and I don't feel like I've done anything great for the business. I just feel like I've done my job, and I feel like there's a lot of other guys that done a whole lot more of the business than what I did, and I respect, you know, I respect the business. I love professional wrestling, and I respect what the guys do. And again, I mentioned earlier on TV, that's not to take anything away from anyone on TV. Those guys are tremendous athletes. They're tremendous performers, and I'm going to order WrestleMania. I'm a fan. I watch that show. No matter what I watch all year, I watch that show. But my point being, I respect what they do, so I do respect the business. I just don't dig the whole sports entertainment package, but I like professional wrestling, and that's what I want people to take away from my book is, if you're a fan, you can find something good at every show, whether it's a character, whether it's a wrestler, whether it's an angle. You know, go out and support your local independents, and help guys like you. Know, I have this $5 won't break you, but it might build someone else up, you know. And so I always say, you know, to me, I think, well, this guy's offering me a DVD, or he's offering me a book, or some pictures or whatever. And it might not be something I necessarily want all the time, but I'm like, how can I turn a guy down for a $5 DVD? That's not going to break me, but it might help build him, you know. And of course, with the boys, as you know, a lot of guys give each other, you know, DVDs or whatever, pictures for kids or stuff like that. But I'm all about that paying it forward. And that's what I hope people take away from the book is that, hey, you know, if they download it for $4.50 on Kindle, they're like, hey, $5 is not going to break me. It might help build Bobby up. It might sell another book. If they order off Amazon, you know, it's only $13.50. It's not like some of the other higher priced books, but, you know, I feel like you get what you pay for, but in my case, from what I hear is I definitely undercharged. They're like people telling me I should have charged, you know, $20 or $25, but it wasn't about the money. It was just about getting the book out there. So I feel like the price is set right. I feel like the people that read it enjoyed it, and I'm really glad, like I said, I mentioned to you, I sincerely thank everyone that tells me they read the book, and I do appreciate it. I appreciate when they leave a review on Amazon.com. They can go to Pin Me, Pay Me. I'll go ahead and plug it here. They can go to Pin Me, Pay Me. Just type in Pin Me, and normally it'll come up. You can order it on Kindle. You can download it. You can get the Kindle app free and download it on the computer. Or you can buy the book, and it'll come to your house within a couple of days. Like I said, it's on sale right now for $13.50. And, you know, if you want an autographed copy, you can get a hold of me on Facebook at the Bobby Blaze Like fan page, or you can go to Bobby Blaze Smedley. I publish it under my legal name, Bobby Blaze Smedley. That's my Facebook name. Get a hold of me, and we'll work out a deal, and I'll send you a copy autographed, you know. I have a guy from up in Cleveland right now. He bought two off Amazon. He's going to send them to me. I'm going to sign them and send them back. I don't care to pay for the shipping on that because it was a friend of mine I talked about, JT Lightning, in the book. It's his son. He's 20-some years old now, and he wanted the book, so he ordered them. He asked me to autograph them. He's going to send them this week. I'm going to autograph them and send them back to him. I'll be more than glad to autograph anyone's book for him. I usually throw in a few pictures. A lot of the boys will write me and like, hey, Bobby, I'm a fan, and they'll want an autograph book. I send it to them, you know. So anything I can do to help the boys out, especially if they're sincere, if they work, you know, regular, and they try to, you know, protect the business and take care of the business and do that, I love that, you know, and I'll do anything I can to help someone out to better themselves to get just, you know, a partial or half of the career that I had. Because I was really lucky. I worked hard, but I was really lucky, too, and it's a combination of being in the right place at the right time. And, yeah, so anything I can do to help one of the boys out, I'll do that, too. So there you go. I plugged it a little bit for you.
Awesome. Well, I highly recommend it to anybody, fans, but especially also young guys that are just getting in the business. It's a really good insight to what it took to get into the business in your day and how you came up and how much different it was back then for somebody to break into wrestling than what it is now. I enjoyed all of it, but I really enjoyed the stories about the international tours and things like that, because that's not something I've been able to experience. You know, I've wrestled some on an independent level and know the small show circuit and things like that, but getting to hear the stories of, like I say, international tours and things such as that was really interesting to me. And like I said, I suggest, whether you're a fan or you're a wrestler, either one, there's something there for everybody. But I think young guys getting the business need to read your story and see how you made it from Kentucky all the way to WCW and Japan and all over the world. It's quite an amazing story.
I was lucky. I went to Tampa. You know, I broke in up here in Kentucky, and I worked about 10, 12 shows. wasn't really smart enough, if you will. And went around a little circuit up here in about a four-month period, and actually about 7 months, a little bit of training for about 3 months, and did about four more months of about, you know, three, four shows a month, like I said, 10 or 12 or so. And I realized, wow, you know, I don't really know what's going on out here. There's something more to this, you know. And I took off, went to Tampa, and, of course, once I got there and got trained properly and got the rest all over Florida, I end up going from Florida to Canada and done a real big tour up there. We worked seven nights a week, twice on Sundays, and that was really, really a great experience. I left Canada, went back to Florida, and worked all over just wherever I could, actually, all around Florida. I went to South Africa, got on a tour over there, and you know, we worked again. I was over in South Africa, had a lot of good heat over there, and it worked out real, real good. As far as the wrestling goes, the promotion I went for, there was two really, really good promoters, and you know, you're going to have one shady promoter here or there, and, you know, I always say about the wrestling promotion, you got to be careful promoters you work there for. There's only two kinds of promoters. Bad and worse. that's kind of my experience over in South Africa. But it worked out. Then I went back to Canada. I went to Australia. You know, that was, wow, that was awesome. That was a first-class tour. Went over there. I had a chance to go back on a second tour about 3 months later, but by that time I was working at Smoky Mountain Wrestling, and it was my best interest at that time to stay at Smoky and not take 3 or 4 weeks off. Because of TV, you know, I had to follow up all the angles, and that paid off, of course, in the long run. And then I went to Japan, And I've been to Japan 5 times, and you know, I don't say it bragging or boasting, but the first time I went for 3 weeks, and it took a little time to get in there. But once I did, and they saw my talent, they invited me back within about 3 weeks, or 3 months rather, for another 3 weeks. And then it just, I had a good business relationship with them and a big contract with them, and I enjoyed that. Went to England, and, you know, I sometimes it's been in the right place at the right time. Sometimes it's just, you know, knowing someone that they're looking for a right person to come in for them. You know, it took me 9 months. Let me emphasize this for all you young guys out there that's listening, and I hope a few of the fans are, you know, wrestlers too, because I did kind of put some of that out there to them. It took me 9 months to get in with Smoky Mountain Wrestling. You know, I talked to Jim Cornette on telephone. I went and met him in person. Then I went back to Canada. I went to Australia, like I said, all those times in between there. And then I had a tryout. And then after that tryout, it took about 3 weeks to actually get on the first loop with them. And that was only due to Robert Gibson getting hurt. And they brought me in, and I worked. And then when Robert came back, by that time, Jim and I and Sandy and Brian, they all liked me. And you know, I worked into a position there. So it took, you know, after about 9 months, once I got the tryout, it took about another 3 weeks. And then probably 2 weeks later, so I'll say 5 weeks of working some house shows, you know, Courtney gave me a booking sheet, and there I was, you know, full time. And he had told me from day one, if I get this thing going full time, you know, you'll be a part of it. We run some shows in your area, and at this time I was in Florida, and worked in Florida about probably 6 or 8 months and going to Canada for 3 to 4 months. And so I was in between. I'd come home every once in a while. Well, I consider home Kentucky. But anyway, so it took me about 9 months, but once they got started, you know, he had just went full-time when I got on the booking sheet, so I was real happy about that. And that was a big break. Cornette gave me my first big break in the U.S. because, like I mentioned, I had already been to, by that point, I had already been to South Africa, Canada twice on big tours, and Australia. And like I said, after I think I was there in 93, March, April, May. About November, I had a chance to go back to Australia and didn't, because I stayed there with, you know, Smoky Mountain. So, you know, it was worth it, like I said. But, yeah, I always loved the international tours, you know. Always have your passport ready. I'll tell you that, too. If you're a young guy and you're talking to someone overseas, let me tell you a bit of advice. Here's the best advice I can give any young guy wanting to do an international tour. And I probably should have put this in the book, and maybe I'll put it in my next one. But the two things you do, never leave the country without a round-trip ticket. Always get a round-trip ticket. I was told that early on, and I always got a round-trip ticket. And that don't ever go for, you know, some shady promoter that you don't know of, or a promotion that's not in the magazines or TV or what have you. Go to a promotion that'll give you a round-trip ticket. And always have your passport ready. Have it ready, because they're good for 10 years now. Buy you one and have it on standby, because you never know, hey, this promoter might take an interest in you, or one of the boys might be over there and says, hey, there's a guy here that I know that lives in Kentucky, and he can work, and let's bring him in, or what have you. You never know, so I guess it's the old Boy Scout saying, be prepared, you know, if that's what someone desires to do. So that's a good advice, I think. I get caught up.
Yeah, it's definitely a chore to get a passport. You don't want to be trying to get one in a day's time, or even a week's time, for that matter.
No, definitely not.
So tell me a little bit about, you know, Australian tours are, you know, awesome, European. But what about when you go to Japan and there's that language barrier there and you're there for a substantial amount of time, does it start to wear on you after a while, being in a strange place where you don't speak the language, or is there enough people around to help you communicate that it's really not an issue?
Well, it can be a big issue, to be honest with you. When I went to Japan, a friend of mine had lived there for about 5 years, and he worked full-time over there. And believe it or not, when I knew him from Tampa, his name was Willie Wilkinson, and a real tough shooter. He worked with Carl Gotch, and he worked with Malenko's. He had been living there because he'd went over in about 89 for a shoot group, and they basically hired him as you know, Carl Gotch over there is known as the God of Japan. And so I'd met Carl a couple of times in Tampa, and I knew this guy, Willie, and he helped me. I sent him, he told me the address and stuff, so I sent him the old VHS tape over and some promo pictures. Well, believe it or not, my first tour, when I got there, I scheduled for 3 weeks. He came home. He went back to Tampa. So I thought, wow. And the only thing I had was a phone call, and it said, look up for a boy named Superboy from Mexico. He speaks English. So I got off the train, and I got the plane, got on a train, and, you know, you kind of stand out when you're in a foreign land if you're not Japanese, you know, where everyone kind of, you know, dark hair, dark eyes, and, you know, and some guys are bigger, of course. And I looked up, and I saw these two Hispanic guys, and I said, well, one of them has got to be Superboy. I can just about guarantee it. And, of course, they was looking for a guy with a tan and a little bit bigger than everyone else, and an American, you know, with long blonde hair. So I met them on the train, actually, because I was told to go to a certain hotel in Tokyo. And Superboy spoke pretty good English, and he kind of helped me. He said, you know, he had been there several times, and he was a friend of Willie's, and he said, I'll help you out. To answer your question, when it comes after, when you're home and you want to go back to Japan, you're just like dying to go back. You love it. You love the tour. You love the money. You know, I just love the business. Well, after about 3 days, man, you're on a tour bus every day. No one speaks the language except for when I went on tours, there's usually one other American and two Mexican wrestlers. And that'd be the four, you know, it'd be two Americans, two Mexican, and then they would have, you know, maybe a guy from England. So everyone else is Japanese. You're about 20 people on a bus, day in and day out, in a hotel, day in and day out, at the arena, day in and day out. And everyone speaks a different language. After about 3 days, it drives you nuts. It would drive you absolutely crazy, you know. And a lot of them do speak good English. They speak broken English. And I don't mean this as a dig at all, but a lot of times they don't speak English unless they want or need something. So they are taught English from about the sixth grade on, grade six. Well, they only use that English if they need you or want you to do something. So you got to be careful what you get into with the language. But I'm just me. I try to get along with a lot of people. And anyway, to answer your question, as far as the matches go, the first night I was there, even though Superboy, he worked the first match, I think I scheduled a third or fourth match. I didn't know this young Japanese guy. They're going to test you. And, man, he laid some kicks on his young boy. And I just basically had to beat him up a little bit and, you know, take over. And, of course, I was going over the match. And after that, I came back, and those guys could see I was working. And all of a sudden, they all spoke English. You know, hey, Bobby Song, you know. So when I've done matches, though, whether I've done tags or six-mans, that's where you really got to pay attention to the language. Because in wrestling, if you're touching someone, you don't really need to speak. You don't need to call, spot. You can just work. And that was one thing that I was blessed with. I could work wherever I went, and I adapted to the style. And so in the ring, you know, you might have a spot here or there, but in the tags and the six-man's matches, all I had to do was listen to Blaze. And everything else was in Japanese, but when I heard Blaze, I knew something involved me. And so a lot of times in the tags there and the six-man's there, they'll do a spot where the smallest to the next to the biggest will do, like say you're going to drop an elbow. And if I was working as a heel, you know, they'll slam like maybe the baby face would go down. Well, the first guy ran in, dropped the elbow, or maybe he executed a move on the guy. The second guy comes through the ropes and drops an elbow. Of course, me being a big American, I would come through third, so I would know that's my spot, you know. And then I would do the big elbow where you get up real high and come down on the guy, you know, something like that. So it's easy to follow suit. In wrestling, you know, you have the international language of, you know, if you do a spot, you know, if a guy's in the middle, the guy takes a tackle or whatever. You just pantomime, you look at each other. It can be a barrier, but if you can work and if you're respectful of the people you're there with, they'll take the time to explain something to you. And you know, same thing with restaurants. The restaurants there, they have, you know, I just tell my boy this the other day. I love the food in Japan. A lot of guys complain about it. The only thing I complain about is some of it's rather expensive. But some of the restaurants, but I took food with me. I had sponsors that were going to take you out to dinner and stuff. So that even wasn't a problem. But I love the food. But you can point to a menu or you can point to the window, and they usually have stuff laid out as to what you pick out. So it can be a problem, but it's usually not. Most of it's in your head because you hear people speaking foreign language, you know, you're like, what the heck are they even saying, man? You know, and it drives you nuts. So you just put your headphones on, crank up some Skinner or crank up some Allman Brothers or whatever you're going to jam to, you know, crank up something and just put your headphones on and read a book or whatever, you know. But I always enjoyed those tours. The style over there, I like the strong style. I adapted to that. That's the way I broke in. So I loved all that over there. I hope that answered the question about the language.
It did, absolutely. Now, something that was lost when the territories like Smoky Mountain went away, nowadays young guys are lucky if they get one match a week on a Saturday night, maybe a Friday and Saturday if they're lucky. So,
right.
You know, that don't add up to very many matches in a year's time. So, like, when you were in Smoky Mountain, and say you're in an angle with Dirty White Boy, over the course of this feud and the amount of towns that Smoky Mountain ran, how many opportunities would you, in general, get a chance to, say, wrestle against the Dirty White Boy in the course of that, as far as, you know, experience?
Yeah, well, you know, when I got there, the booking sheet, you'd have about 14 to 16 bookings, you know. You'd get about 16 bookings a month easy with Cornette or with Smoky Mountain. So on that, say I had 16 bookings, you know, you're looking at, you know, you'd do it Thursday, Friday, Saturday, or Friday, Saturday, Sunday. There's 3 days right there. Then it got to where we started off doing TV a little bit different, but it got to where we were doing TVs the first of every month, or well, the first Monday, I should say, I'm sorry, first Monday of every month. So there's your 4 days in a row. You might go Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday. Then the next week you might have a Thursday, Friday, Saturday. So there's seven bookings right there within a week's time, you know, pretty much. You might have a Tuesday and Wednesday off, and then you might have another Tuesday and Wednesday off, or a Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday. And then you would have another Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, another four-day run. So out of that 16 times, or 16 bookings, I'd probably, let's just use Tony Anthony, their Dirty White Boy, I might work with him 12, 13 times. And then a couple of times on house shows, you know, we might mix it up and I might, well, actually, I'm sorry, all of those would be house shows, not getting a TV yet. But on those, say we was working in Paintsville, Kentucky, or Jackson, Kentucky, or up here maybe in my hometown of Ashland, I might work someone else, you know, to mix it up. Maybe I worked with, you know, Candido or whoever, Killer Kyle. We used Killer Kyle in instance because he was there at the time. So I might work with Tony, you know, 12, 13 times and work with Killer Kyle, you know, two or three times that month. And then I'd have TV, and, of course, I'd work with whoever. You know, it might be a Mike Sampson or it might be, you know, whoever. And so I'd get two to three TV matches. You know, and then, of course, set my angle up, and I'd do one with Tony Anthony or you know, next one was Candido or whoever it was. So, you know, you'd get about 16 matches there. Well, on top of that, what was great was sometimes, a lot of times, you know, I worked for Bobby Fulton up in Ohio, and he had shows, and I'd get to work on his shows, and so I might have 20, 21 matches a month. Because I'd pick up four or five with him. He might run a Thursday that Smoky Mountain didn't run. He might run a Sunday afternoon or a Sunday evening that Smoky didn't run. And Cornette, him, you know, Bobby had helped work early on with Cornette. His partner, Tommy Rogers, actually gave me Cornette's number when I was in Florida to call. So, you know, I had a little connection there. But, you know, so I might pick up, depending on the month, I might pick up another four or five matches with Bobby if I wasn't working for Cornette, or even if I was. The other thing, there's guys that, you know, out of Tennessee that ran shows, you know, these independent guys. There was a guy out of the Carolinas that used to run up in West Virginia and over Virginia. He might run a fair date in the summertime. Some of these guys that get these fairs, and I'm sure you're familiar with these county fairs and summer motion type things. I work for promoters out of West Virginia, on a Tuesday and a Wednesday nights that, you know, maybe an afternoon or a night just for a fair date. But Smoky Mountain, typically, I'd get between 12 to 16 bookings. If you're in an angle with, you know, Dirty White Boy or Candido or whoever I was in an angle with, I'd probably wrestle them at least 10 or 12 times on a 12 to 14 month, you know, day booking. And then the other 2 to 4 days I might work with, you know, someone like Kyle or Tim Horner, even. We'd have babyface matches. I worked with Horner a couple of times just to mix it up and give the fans something different, you know. But I hope that answers your question. But typically, we'd have about 16 Now, there was some of us, we'd have 20, especially in the summertime, because, again, Smoky Mountain had a lot of fair dates, too. So you might pick up a Tuesday or a Wednesday, and that was always good, you know. I worked for Promoters Out Georgia there towards the end, and I'd go down for Ben Masters or Buck Robley. I'd go down for them and do two or three days down there and then come back. I remember one time me and Steve Armstrong, we finished up on Smokey, took off with the Georgia, done 3 days down there, stayed with Brad, came right back to Kentucky and picked up, you know, three more bookings in Smoky Mountain. And then I went up to with a couple boys from Tennessee. After I left there, we came back to West Virginia and done three shows over here and two in Kentucky. So I had probably, you know, 12 straight days with, you know, matches every night. And, of course, that involves a lot of traveling. That's why I put have boots will travel. You know, I'd have myself. And that's the thing, guys, that are listening, if you want to boot. And I agree with you. It's hard to do it nowadays, but if you're smart and you take your time and you look at where you can be at, all you got to do, you're your own businessman. You really are. Your body and your mind and your wrestling skills are your business. And get in touch with promoters and set up a loop for yourself. You know, if you can do 2 days, say you do 2 days in, you know, a month at for a promoter in Tennessee, if you can get two dates in West Virginia, you know, find people. Ricky Morton still does it all the time, you know. Get guys that, instead of just working out Saturday, find a guy that's running somewhere close on a Friday and maybe a Sunday afternoon and turn that one day into 3 days, you know. You never know until you try. And of course, you want to make it worth your while. You want to get paid. You know, that's what it says, pin me, pay me. You know, you don't want to spend $20 in gas or $50 in gas and get $5. Or I mentioned a book. You don't want to get paid in a daggum, you know, cold hot dog, a flat soda pop, and stale popcorn. You know, that's just ridiculous. And as a promoter, you know, take the time, make sure everyone on the card gets a little bit, and especially guys that try hard, you know, and they sell tickets locally or what have you, pay them a little bit more and bring guys in and help enhance your talent and help get guys over and run legitimate shows where I feel legitimate. I go to a couple up here in West Virginia, and they have a great time. I go to some here in Kentucky, they're kind of flat, depending on what area you're in, and, you know, I take those shows in and I talk to guys and say, hey, why don't you do this, do that? And it's all about promoting. It's all about promoting yourself and going out there and getting, like you said, if a guy in your hometown is running a show once a month, well, that might be all you get, and that's fine. At least you're getting some experience. But if you want to get experience, wrestling will give you. I just talked to Rip Rogers the other day. He was wrestling Roddy Piper back in Portland years ago, and he was green as can be, and Piper let him call the whole match for a TV angle, then put him over, and when Piper beat, the fans loved him even more. Here was this up-and-comer, nobody, who actually, you know, Rip had wrestled in ICW and been to Puerto Rico and all over the place. All I was saying is, what I'm getting at is, you was mentioning a guy, you know, might work once a month, and I agree, that's not a lot of matches throughout the year, but to get experience, what you should do is like I was saying, is you're your own businessman, and work with other promoters, and I know it's hard on independents if a guy's promoting shows, they don't want to necessarily work together with someone else, but as an independent wrestler, independent contractor, just get with another couple guys that you like traveling with or working with, and load up in a car and get a booking. So you get a booking in your hometown once a month on a Saturday. Go somewhere else, you know, an hour, hour and a half away and work a Friday show. You know, travel the other direction about 3 hours maybe. You know, work you about a 4 or 5 hour radius there. You know, I know in Canada we'd do 1,500 miles a month, or a week rather, and 1 week we had 2,400 miles for all the 7 shows we had. Well, actually 8 because we had a Sunday double shot. A guy can do it if he'll go out there and work with a couple other guys if you don't like driving by yourself. And, you know, work you a show, work a Friday in, work a Thursday night in. If there's someone running one, get on that show, travel back, get on the Friday show, do your hometown on a Saturday, you know, and maybe someone's got an afternoon show on Sunday, and there's 4 bookings right there. The next week, maybe you only go twice, and, you know, you just work it into where you're getting those matches every month, where you're getting 8 or 10 matches. The other thing is try to get quality matches, you know, some of these shows, you know, I know guys that, you know, don't want to work with this guy or don't want to work with that guy. Well, you know, get with someone that you enjoy working with, get with two or three of them, and go to those shows. I got a couple friends up here in Ohio and West Virginia, and I help them get bookings. And what they do is I try to get them all in the same different shows. You know, I know that sounds different, same different. Well, they'll go to two or three shows on their own. They'll do a couple of shows in West Virginia, and they'll meet back up and go to some shows over here in Kentucky. So I get, you know, six or eight bookings a month versus getting three or four just in their local area. And I think a guy can do that. I'm not saying you'll get rich, but you'll have fun, and you love the business anyway. So if a guy's willing to do it, he can get those matches, Gene. That's all I'm getting at. So I hope that answered the question there.
And that's also where what you mentioned before is so important. Selling those DVDs, selling those pictures, because a guy getting his foot in the door at a new show can't always get a very good guarantee starting out until he proves himself. So if he can sell a few pictures or he can sell that DVD or whatever he's got on the gimmick table, it'll help get him gas to get him back and forth or buy him a meal. And from the wrestler's perspective, you know, that even $25 at a gimmick table could mean, you know, everything as far as a fan who thinks, you know.
Absolutely, you've got to figure it out right there, and you make a good point. Like I said, the $5 won't break me, but it might help build someone else. You know, and I use that me as being anyone. You know, I know I've went before from, you know, not having $5. You know, I think we've all been in that situation at one point or another. But my point is, like you said, if you get you some pictures, get your DVD, you know, or get whatever. In my case, I've got a book I take to the shows and sell. You know, that $5, like you said, you get a couple people that buys that, you know, it might pay for your gas to the next town. It might buy you a meal. I know when I was in Smoky Mountain, you know, I never cut in my paycheck because the gimmicks, you know, helped me out a whole lot. I'd pay for my hotel out of gimmicks. I'd pay for my gas out of gimmicks, and I'd pay for my meals out of it. And I'd come home, and we got paid every Monday, and I have my check to deposit in the bank. You know, and WCW looked better because the money came every 2 weeks by FedEx. They just sent you a check, and Ted Turner's checks don't bounce. But, you know, well, I'm not going to be making those Ted Turner checks anymore, WWE checks. But the bottom line is there's a chance that you can get there to a bigger company if you work hard enough. And even if it's just a house show or enhancement talent, that's fine. Get to it, you know, go to the show and talk to them. But like you, to get back what you're saying, those guys in the independents, myself included, you know, it doesn't hurt to have all those. I know a guy that he would work. He was a talented wrestler. He'd work a little bit cheaper for people, especially guys he knew, instead of staying in his home area. He was out of Cleveland. But instead of staying there, he wanted to get out and travel some. And that's one of the things Rip Rogers told me just the other day. You ever think I didn't want to just travel? He got to travel everywhere, you know. And that was the thing. He made money, too, of course, back in territories. But the bottom line is, to get back to the other guy, he would go, and he might work for, you know, $20 or $30. He might work for $75 or $100, just depending on who he's working for. But he had all these T-shirts and action figures, and he had basically a flea market, and that's how he paid for his gas and his food and his hotel. And, of course, he had a little guarantee. Like I said, some nights, I know he charged 30 some nights. I know he charged 75 some nights. He was probably worth $100, $125. But he would rather, you know, get out and travel on the weekends. He had a good job back home Monday through Friday, but he'd leave Friday after work, and he'd stay gone. He was single. He'd wrestle Friday night, Saturday, and a Sunday afternoon or a Sunday night. He even ran shows on a Sunday night just to have a booking for himself, and he'd do real well. But he had it, you know, he had that backup with the gimmick money. So you make a really good point, man. That $5 might really build someone else up, you know. And it might be a $2 picture, but you sell 10 pictures that night, you got $20, you know, that's your gas money.
Absolutely.
And you're out having fun, and you're entertaining the fans, and that's what it's all about. And I feel like you're giving something back to the fans, because I feel like a lot of times on these wrestling shows, if they watch TV, that's all they see, but there's no interaction. You know, when you get to the independent shows, there's crowd interaction with the boys. You get to meet people from all over the country or possibly the world, and you go out there and you have a good time. And whether you're a heel or babyface, you're out there doing something you love doing. And so, you know, that's the whole thing, is we're in this business because we love it. And so what, you're not going to get rich. I'm not talking about just you personally or me personally, but just anyone listening. You might not, but you know what? When it's all said and done, you have a good time, meet some really cool, fun people. And, you know, as long as you're not just sucking money out of your own account and sinking into your gas tank or your food or whatever. But, you know, if you're just breaking even, at least you had a good time with some of your buddies and you got to wrestle and you got to see a different part of the country. And, you know, you made a dime along the way, hopefully.
I want to share a theory with you that I have and get your opinion on it. I love the title of your book because I feel like it represents a time in wrestling that's passed us by. Because I think today's wrestler, especially on the independent level, has what I've come to refer to as Steve Austin syndrome, where after the rise of Steve Austin's popularity in wrestling, on the indie shows that I would do, you had guys saying, well, I got to look strong. You know, used to, babyfaces got over based on sympathy and a comeback, but now the babyfaces didn't want to sell because Steve Austin doesn't hardly sell, and I can't do that. It'll hurt my character. And you got guys refusing to put people over, refusing to do this and that because they had to look strong. Nobody wanting to be the one to get pinned, you know, even to the point of not even being worried about the pay part, just as long as they could win or they could be the champion and go out there with the replica belt that the promoter bought. In all your travels, to, you know, you attend a lot of shows still, like you said, and try to help a lot of guys. Have you seen a lot of that, and do you attribute that attitude that a lot of the guys have nowadays? Do you think that's accurate? It's more of like the Steve Austin thing, or is it just a different mindset that guys have these days?
I think it's a different mindset some of these guys have. I think your theory is very strong. It holds a lot of truth to it. You know, first of all, they say, my character. Well, I'll give you an example. Danny Trejo. I followed his career. I'm a big fan of his. He got a break in a movie called Runaway Train way back in 1985. He got beat up in a boxing ring by Eric Roberts playing a convict. Now, look how his character has developed through the years. Everyone thinks Danny Trejo is a badass. He is legitimate bad, okay? But he don't care to take all these different roles because it's a character he's portraying. He's not always Machete, you know? and that's the whole thing. When you're out there as a wrestler, you're the character there, and you should work for, first of all, a person with attitude like that, they should feel like, I'm very fortunate to even be on this wrestling show, to have the ability to go out here and perform for these people. Put your ego aside. Do what's best for your match and what's best for the card. I've got three guys I'm working with right now, pretty regular, that I stay in constant contact with, and they all three have improved so much just in the last couple of years because they started realizing, and that none of them actually had an ego. Let me back up there. When I started helping them, one guy I trained 10 years ago, and he put me in touch with these other two gentlemen. When I trained this young boy, I told him the same thing Malenko told me. Don't work for your ego, work for your match. If you do that, the match will get over, you will get over. If you do that, and everyone does that, the whole card gets over. Now, I like your theory, what you're saying about this Steve Austin theory. It makes sense. Some of these guys, they feel like it's a privilege that, you know, they feel like I deserve to be here. I need this. I need to do that. And again, I'm not talking about the money, but their character. Well, the thing is, if they were trained properly, they need to realize I'm working for my match, not the ego. And if they work, if they're professionals, they will swallow their pride, back up, and say, okay, it doesn't matter if I win or lose. Okay, for example, I talked to Joe Malenko probably 6 weeks ago. One of the things we talked about was, back in February, the anniversary of when I won the title from Lawler. He was like, you know, the boys don't win anything, Bobby. And I was like, exactly. And that's why I tried to tell you, I didn't beat Jerry Lawler. That was something that Cornette came up with, ran it by me, Sandy Scott, Brian Hildebrand, and Jerry Lawler. That was our business decision. That was what's best for the business at that particular time. It's not like I went out there and beat them. The business is the work. So go out there and work for the business. Work for your match and put your ego aside. I know exactly what you're saying. I want to, as you read my book, you probably know I use a few choice words. And I'll refrain from that because I'm getting worked up. Because if I was in a locker room, and I don't care who the person was, if they're a professional, they wouldn't be having this conversation with me. Because I'd tell them, this is what's best for the business. Now, maybe they're going to go over, and that's fine. But I'd even explain why they're going over. You know, here's why we're doing this angle. I had last month at a little show I went to, we had probably about 100 people there, and this is good for this little group, two guys that had done something the promoter didn't like the previous month. He asked me to speak to him. Because I just go, I hang out, talk to him, consult with him, if you will. And I hope that's what I'm doing right now, is just consulting, telling you, telling the fans, telling the boys. And I told these guys, here's what you did wrong. It was something stupid. They yelled something to a little 6 or 7 year old kid, and they run a family-oriented wrestling promotion, which I respect. And I just told him why. And I said, now, here's the thing. And Kevin Sullivan was really good about this. He could wrestle, for example, Chris Benoit. They put all personal issues aside. Kevin does what's best for his matches. You know, he didn't take any liberties with Benoit. He didn't feel like Benoit took any liberties with him. I told these two guys that work in a tag team, as much heat as I had with them, because I was so mad at them because they yelled at a little kid. I said, you're heels, you idiots. That kid paid. His parents paid. He can yell what he wants at you. Don't yell something back to him, you know, on this particular show. I said, tomorrow you might be working in a town that the show runs hardcore or whatever, and you can yell at cousin fans. I said, this is not that show. I said, now. And I pulled another guy, one of the partners that runs the company, aside, and I said, here's the deal. You guys are going to still go over tonight. They're putting the titles. I mean, they've been there about 6 months. They knew better. But I said, all personal difference aside, here's what's best for business. And you're going to keep them for the next 3 to 4 months if all goes well. If not, we'll say you lost them tomorrow up in Chillicothe, Ohio, or bumfuck Egypt, you know. We'll make up a storyline, and you all won't work here anymore. And that is like, it's real cool. So that's what I'm telling you is I will tell them, excuse my language here, see, I get worked up, man. Gene, you get me worked up, Gene. Zach's on it. My blood pressure already full and get me high about these guys. The bottom line is work for your match, not your ego. If your match gets over, you'll get over. And if everyone does on a card where you have 5, 7, or 12 matches, if everyone does that, the whole card gets over. And guess what? A kid will go to school on Monday and say, hey, man, I went to wrestling Friday night, and you should have seen this one guy, man. Daggone, this guy did this. They'll say this. Who was it? Did you see John Cena, WWE? No, man. I saw this guy named Gene. He kicked the snot out of this guy named Bobby, and Bobby's eye was swollen, or, you know, Bobby got thrown out of the ring, and Gene pinned him, and he held his tight. And guess what? That kid will want to go with him next time. And that dad that took him, he's going to tell his buddy, you know what? I took my son down at wrestling the other night, and I thought it was going to be a joke. Well, this guy, Bobby and Gene, they put on a match, and I'm telling you what, I don't care what to say about it. And that guy's work partner will say, when did WWF or when did TNA come to town? He'll say, no, I went down to this local armory or this local high school. And guess what? His buddy will go. And guess what? If everyone does that, your house goes from 100 to 125 to 150 to 200 people, and you keep building on that because the guys are working for the match, they get over. If everyone does that, the card gets over. And if everyone does that, guess what? The houses go up, and the people that come out to these independent shows, they say, my God, professional wrestling is alive. And they stop talking about, I'm not saying they'll ever stop talking about like WWE or whomever, but they'll start talking about you. And they'll start talking about Gene's matches, Bobby's matches, the local, you know, CPW, Championship Pro Wrestling, or a Big Time Pro Wrestling, or whatever organization you work for, man. And that's what it's all about. That's the way it was done in the old days. That's the way it can be done today if people would work together and work for their matches and not their ego. And that pretty much, that's why I say pin me, pay me, have booth for travel. I'm not saying there was times I didn't want to go over or I felt like I needed to go over to keep myself strong. There's a way you can get beat, and when you get beat, you're still strong. And you talked about the baby faces when I used to get over on sympathy. I watched this guy in Canada for two different tours. They had his little Indian guy named Soaring Eagle, and I watched him sell. And, man, he got over huge because, and I was working on the heel, but he got over because people believed in him. So when he won, it really meant something. When he got beat, they were like, oh, man, he was so close. Well, after I finished up there, like I said, I went to Australia. I got on with Smoky Mountain. Ricky Morton pulled me aside. Is there ever a better baby face in the wrestling business than Ricky Morton? He said, Bobby, watch me sell. It's about sympathy. He told me that, and I remember it. It was on a Sunday afternoon in Johnson City, Tennessee, at the gimmick table. He pulled me to the side. He said, watch me sell. He said, you're so close. He said, you're just missing it just a little bit. Well, what am I going to say? I see guys do this nowadays. This is no lie. A guy, Ricky Morton, was telling something in June. I was at a show of Ricky Morton, Robert Gibson, Tracy Smothers, Brian Blair was there, Bobby Eaton was there. It was a legend show up in West Virginia. And Ricky was telling someone something. The guy turned around and walked away. Ricky just blew it off and went away. You know, Ricky's laid back. If you ever met Ricky, good guy. If Ricky's telling you something, you better listen. That was 20 years ago. He said, Bobby, come here. I walked over to him. He pulled me to the side. He said, watch me sell tonight. Watch me sell. He said, you're so close to getting it. He said, it's all about the sympathy. Bring them with you. Because I was kind of new at working at a face in Smoky Mountain. I was new there. I was just starting a program with Tony. And that was all. And so I listened, I watched, and I learned. And, yeah, I was telling you a story earlier about Piper and Rick Rogers. Here's this. Piper's the biggest baby face in the territory on a Saturday morning TV. Boom, gets beat by the heel, and they love him even more. You know, that's the whole thing, is you get the people to believe in you. We all want to believe in that suspended, you know, the suspension, the belief, man, is there if people go out and do their job. And I don't take any shame in a person that goes out, win, lose, or draw. It doesn't matter. The only thing that matters is if you get over with the people and they want to come back and see you. Barry Horowitz made a career out of getting beat, you know, and he was winless Jack Hart in Florida. He wrestled with Bret Hart somewhere at one time. You know, he wrestled everywhere, and he was enhancement talent. But you know what? I talked to Terry Taylor the night I signed my contract. Xbox Sean Walton was a friend of mine. I had already talked to him that night. I talked to Dean Malenko. And, you know, one thing, you know, Dean, he said, Bobby, how much are you making now? And I was making pretty good money. I was working 4 or 5 nights a week. I was staying relatively close to home. You know, I was making about $600 a week. And basically, you know, WCW is going to double that. And Dean said, hey, how much are you making now? I told him. He said, how much they offer? I told him. He said, are you an idiot? And I said, no. I went and told Terry. And Terry said, Bobby, he said, the matches, they might not be like on the independent circuit. They might not be, quote, real. But you know what is? And that's this check Ted Turner's going to send you every 2 weeks. It's real. The money's real. And when I went to the banker, the bank man never said to me, Bobby, did you win last week? Did you lose? He didn't care. He cared if I made my car payment. He cared when I had enough money down to pay for my house. He cared about did I make my mortgage payment every month. You know, that's all he cared about. He didn't have to call me and say, hey, Bobby, I saw you on TV Saturday and you got beat. He didn't care. What he saw was when I come into the bank on a Monday or a Tuesday and I made my mortgage payment or I cashed my check or I paid for my vehicle, that's all he cared about because it was pin me, pay me, have booth for travel. I'll get beat this week on Nitro, but I'll be back on Thursday and have a competitive match on Thunder. And guess what? On Saturday, I'm going to be at a house show. I'm going to win, and then I'm going to do a Sunday afternoon pay-per-view, and I'm going to get thrown out of the ring by the Giant. But they're going to pay me to go to these pay-per-views. They're going to pay for my airline. They're going to give me money every month, or every week, rather. And then on Tuesday, I'm going to do a TV taping, and they're going to give me someone like Barry Horowitz or Mark Starr or whoever, and I'm going to win that match, and I'm going to win about 3 or 4, and I'm going to get beat one, and it doesn't matter. Same thing in Japan. When I went there, I'd work hard 4 or 5 nights, and I'd beat these boys up. And I mean, I'd beat them up, and I'd pin them. I'd do a brain buster. Boom. And then I'd be in a semi-main or main event, wrestling with one of the big stars there. And guess what? The people there believed, this big American, he's going to beat our star. He's going to beat Sasuke. one of the best matches I ever had. I probably had about three or four what I consider a five-star match, and I'm not using my ego here. I'm being sensible. Out of all the matches I had, and I was at Sasuke's hometown, that he had the title on the line, defended his hometown, about 2,200 people there, and I had to get about 20 minutes with the guy. But for four, five nights in a row, I beat these guys up. And then I'm in a main event in the guy's hometown. I know what the score is before I even go in there that night in the ring. And guess what? I give the guy a good, good competitive match. Like I said, to me, it's probably one of my probably top five matches ever. Boom. I get beat. I tap out of an arm bar. And it gets over because the guy won his hometown. And then the next night, I think I've done another main event, a tag match. And then the next three or four nights I was there, I started winning again. You know, and that's what it is. You get that believability. And that to answer your question about these guys with the ego, they need to put that ego aside. And maybe they get beat. And if you're only working once a month with no TV, I know it's a bit different. But guess what? You can still come back the next month and still be strong. You get beat. And they say, "Daggone it, Gene, you pulled Bobby's trunks," or maybe, you know, whatever you did, you threw me on the top rope and, you know, I hit my head, you rolled me back in, I pulled my tights. Well, there's always next month we say, "Gene, how's it doing?" You know, and we still work, and my character or myself, it's up to me. I can still get over just because I got beat. And maybe I go out there and beat someone up in the first or second match, and I win, and then the following match, you know, or the following week, rather, or the following month or whatever, me and you work again, a return angle. And they say, "Hey, Bobby beat that guy last week or last month. Now he can beat Gene, you know." And we go out there and have another good match. And, boom, you screw me again. You know, maybe you hit me for Royal Quarters or something. But you know what? The next month I'm going to get you. And hopefully during that time people are coming back and they say, "Hey, man, this guy's got a chance. This Bobby Blade's got a chance to beat Gene Jackson." And then the following month, guess what? Maybe I beat you. And, boom. That's the revenge. We break off in a separate angle. And you go your way, I go mine. But that's what it's all about, Gene, right there. I hope that answers your question. These guys with what, to quote Steve Austin Complex, if you will, "All my characters got to stay strong." You can stay strong, win, lose, or draw, if you learn how to work and work the people and get them to believe in you, in your character. They, you can go out here and you can lose 95% of your matches. But at the end of that match, every match that you have, make them, make the people believe in you. And then do something in that match. So guess what? 5 minutes after that match, say you and I are having a match. I want to have a good match with you. Win, lose, or draw, I'm going to go out there and bust my butt. But I'm going to do something in that match so good, so great, so significant. That might be just poke in the eyes. I don't know. That might be a powerbomb. Who knows? I'm just saying, I'll do something. So 5 minutes after that match, they're not going to say Bobby won or Gene won. They're going to say, "Did you see what that son of a bitch Blaze did to that guy? He poked him in the eyes. Or did you see Gene? He pulled out a Royal Quarter and hit that Bobby." You want to give them something. So you know what? They're not thinking about who won or lost. They're thinking about what did Gene do? What did Bobby do? And they say, "Oh, man, you know what? Gene did hit him with the gimmick there, or the quarters or whatever, but you know what, Bobby will get him next month or next week or tomorrow night or whatever it is." And that's what it's all about. That's it in a nutshell for you right there. It doesn't matter if I win or lose, Gene, or we're going to draw, brother. All I'm going to tell you is this: boom, 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 you're going to get me, I'm going to do this, and at the end of the night, hopefully we go away, we're have a good match, and at the end of the match, win, lose, or draw, you get your hand raised, I get beat. And I'll get you back next month because, daggone it, them people believe in us and what we're doing. And we want them saying, "Bobby done this or Gene done that, and here it was. And I'll get you next time." You know, that's the believability of it all.
God, I hope everybody involved in wrestling in these parts will hear that because, I mean, it makes so much sense. But the fact that people can't get that, because like you say, by that third month, you've not only built up the baby face, but you've built up the crowd. Like you said, they're going, telling people, they're bringing more people. If in that very first match, if you had that same attitude like we were talking about, and you're just like, "Well, no, I can't lose. This is my hometown," or whatever, and you go out and you just whip my ass and pin me, there's no reason for anybody to come back. You're not any more over than you were when you came out to the ring.
I wrestled Buddy Landell in my hometown. Let me tell you something. I'd already lost a strap. I'd had it. I beat Lawler, as we know. I was wrestling at Landale. Well, we didn't have TV in this area. We had TV about 30 miles from here. I had lost the title in Johnson City, Tennessee to Landale, and this was about 3 weeks later. We was in my hometown. We'd already done a couple little towns. We've done a TV. So the people that watched TV, and this, of course, there wasn't a whole lot of internet back then, exposing it like it is now. But we was in my hometown. I helped promote several towns for Smoky Mountain, one of them being my hometown. We had about 500 or 600 people down here at the Armory. I go to Buddy, and I say, Buddy, I need to walk out that title tonight because the people here don't have TV. They don't know that I've lost the strap, you know. What can we do to work on this? And Buddy said, let me think about it, Bobby. I don't know if I can do that. Well, I was thinking with my ego because I was thinking, okay, I need to go out here with this title because they still think I'm a champ because it hasn't aired yet on TV, even 30 miles away. That TV won't come out until this afternoon or tomorrow afternoon, rather, being a Saturday instead of a Friday. So I'm thinking even if someone did come from around here, they're not going to see it till tomorrow on TV that I actually lost the title. Anyway, bottom line is, Buddy and I get back together. He says, Bobby, here's what we're going to do. He says, I'm going to go out there with the title. And here's the finish. And I said, okay, buddy, it's cool. I understand. This is what's best for business. I went out there, and Buddy and I, like I said, we had probably closer to 600 people. That's about what we averaged here. Anyway, we went out there, had a tremendous match. At the finish, Buddy pulls the gimmick out. Hildebrand took just a small little, not even a bump, just a cellular little elbow. Buddy pulls the gimmick out. I kick him in the stomach. He drops it. I DDT him. As I'm pinning him, he reaches over, sticks the gimmick up under my trunks there. We're sticking out a little bit. I pin him 1, 2, 3. Hildebrand gives me the title. I raise my arms up. As I do, he sees the thing sticking out of my trunks, part of the chain hanging down. He reverses the decision. Landale is knocked out, basically, laying in the ring, selling the DDT still. He just barely got the gimmick over and shoved it in my, you know, pants where it's halfway hanging out. There he is, laying in the middle of the ring. I throw the title back on him. The place is going nuts because they think I've now won the title. Even though I lost it on TV, and, it, you know, they didn't know that yet, legitimately, he had the title. They think I won the title in my hometown. Not only have I beat, you know, Lawler and Landale and whoever else along the way, now I've regained it back in my hometown. That's a great feeling. You let it sit in. Hildebrand or Mark Curtis sees the gimmick, disqualifies me. I throw the belt layer right across Landale's stomach, who's laying out in the middle of the ring, and the place still goes nuts, and I'm over even more because the hometown boy got screwed. He had the title for all of 2 minutes that night, and I got screwed on a reverse decision because that daggum Buddy Landale stuck that gimmick on me. I didn't know it, and I got beat. I'm sitting there selling it like, what the heck? I didn't use it. The fans are irate. They're hot. They're like, he didn't use the chain. He didn't use it. You know, they're yelling. And I'm more over, and I still got beat, and I didn't have the title. I went in the back. Of course, I thank Buddy. I thank everyone for being on the show. I thank the house, okay? The boys helped the house. Ricky and Robert was there. You know, white boy, regular crew. At the end of the night, being my hometown, me and Sandy Scott have to settle up with the money and everything because I had a different deal in the towns I ran. I got my nightly pay plus the percentage of the gate, and that was always real good. And plus, I got concessions in some of those towns. So, Sandy Scott, who I had a lot of respect for, he says to me, Bobby, who called that finish tonight? And the way he said it, I was almost like taken back, like, oh, God. Because in my head, it went over so great. And I'm thinking, is he going to rip me a new one for that finish? Because he knew it, Buddy and I had discussed me going out the title earlier. I said, Buddy did. He said, oh, my God. He said, Buddy called that? I said, yeah. He said, and I gave Buddy credit because he did. He called it. He said, man, he said, do you realize how well he got you over calling that? He said, that was better than anything you and I came up with that title. And I said, I know. Buddy called it. He said, man, he said, you thank him. I said, absolutely. He said, do you realize how over you were tonight? And I said, yes, sir. He said, Buddy must be a real idiot to put you over that much. And I said, and he was joking, of course, when he said it. And I said, how you mean it? And he said, like I said, he said, he likes you. He really got you over tonight, didn't he? I said, absolutely. I said, we can call him an idiot or we can call him a genius. I said, I think it's one of the same tonight because that's how you get over. And, you know, the next, well, actually I was on a Friday, Saturday, probably on that Monday at TV or whatever it was, I went to Buddy right away when I saw him next, and I said, hey, you realize how well you got me over, and I got beat? And he was like, yeah, I told you, I'm going to make you, Bobby, I'm going to make you. If you ever talk to Buddy, you know how he talks. And yeah. And that was true. So here I am in my hometown, probably 500 or 600 people, and I get beat, and I'm still over? Yes, there's a way you can do that, you know, because, like I said, had we waited another day to have the show, I had lost the title about probably, I think it was about 3 weeks before this town came here, and the TV was running behind a week. Some of the people that came from about 30-mile radius, they would have saw it anyway that I didn't actually have the title. So we would have been lying to them, if you will, you know, had we went out there with me having the title. So we didn't. We went out there, but he had the title. I won it, and then I got it taken away from me, and I still got over. That's what people need to realize. It can be done. If one of the, some of the boys are listening, like you said, you hope some of them are, and I hope they are too. And I'll be glad to talk to and help anyone like that if they'll just listen, because I love the business and I respected the business and I love the angle I was involved in, and I did what was best for the business. It didn't mean anything. It didn't amount to hillbill beans that I walked out there about the title that night. What mattered was I won the title. I beat Landell, but daggummit, he outsmarted me. He put that gimmick on me. Mark Curtis saw it hanging from my tights, reversed the decision, and boom, I'm still over? Yes, I was still over. Because we won.
Beautiful finish, because you get the full range of emotions from the fans. You get the elation of the win. You get the anger of you getting screwed. And you got them coming back to see what's going to happen next. I mean, so it's perfect.
Absolutely.
You know.
You're exactly right. You summed it all up. Everything I rambled on about, you summed up. Exactly. We took them through the gauntlet of emotions because they would be back the following, well, we ran here, you know, 2 months in advance. So they would come back in 2 months to see the show. And I think, you know, after I probably broke off, we'd done a deal where I worked with the Heavenly Bodies and a six-man. We'd done a deal where I worked with Ricky and Robin and a six-man. You know, we changed it up. As I mentioned earlier, you know, we'd go to some shows, we didn't have TV in my hometown of Ashton here. We'd have the TV. It came about probably between 20 and 30 miles out is where the actual TV stopped at. It didn't come into the city limits. So, you know, we changed it up here sometimes. But, you know, if we was an hour away, we had TV and say, Johnson, Paceville up in Johnson County or somewhere, you know, we might do that still. I might be working with White Boy or Landell or whoever I was working with. But, you know, so here in Ashland, they come back the next, you know, 2 months later, and there I am. There I am with Ricky and Robert, and we're in a six-man against, you know, the Gangsters or someone, you know. So it didn't matter that I got beat the month before or 2 months before or whatever, because for that particular night, I still was over. And so when me and Ricky and Robert tagged together, of course, they're over. Now I'm over even stronger, you know. So that's just called working, man. And you work for your match, not your ego.
Now, one of the questions somebody sent me when I told them you were going to be on the show is they wanted to know if you ever witnessed one of the infamous Jim Cornette meltdowns while you're working in Smoky Mountain.
Oh my gosh. I've witnessed more than one.
Yeah,
I've witnessed more than one. One comes to mind I didn't put in the book. I'll go ahead and share this with you. One of the best ones, and one of the few times Cornette and I had heat. I saw several. I was in the ride over Virginia. You know, I saw the lady that's head who ran up and hit the back of Cornette's tennis racket. And I don't even know. He was just holding it up, and her head, she just ran into it for some reason. He didn't swing it. That was in Knoxville. I swear he didn't hit that lady in the head with that tennis racket. No, yeah, that was another incident. He went nuts on the fans. But anyway, no, I was wrestling. We was doing TV. I think it was somewhere like Cumberland, Kentucky or somewhere, Council, Virginia or wherever, some godforsaken town, I'm sure, somewhere. And here I was, I just come off the title reign with, you know, doing all the stuff, laying down this and that. And anyway, you know, I don't know what your language barrier here is being on this radio show, but, you know, Cornette, I don't know who cusses more, me or Cornette. Normally when I talk, I'm trying to refrain from, again, I don't know what your restrictions are, but basically, you know, I was in a car for 20 years and a locker room with guys and hanging out with guys, so I just I normally just talk like a guy. I'm worse than a Tarantino movie probably when it comes to language, the way I talk. But Cornette's probably one up on me on the GDs and the MFers and, you know, everything else. But anyway, SOB, we're getting ready to wrestle. This one had Mike Furness, he used to play football for University of Tennessee. His brother Doug Furness passed away. Of course, he was a big star over in Japan and went up to, you know, WWF at the time. And anyway, Mike was just, you know, great as hell and couldn't work yet. He was just learning, and he was supposed to be wrestling Kyle on TV. Well, I didn't know that. I mean, I knew, you know, Mike couldn't work yet. He was just learning, and he was building off the football angle. Anyway, I was supposed to wrestle Larry Santo, Glover Strong, and keep myself strong, you know, and if you ever see Larry Santo, if you can't have a good match with Larry Santo, something's wrong with you. That guy, Mr. Tennessee, he could work with anyone, and he'd always put everyone over, and he had no ifs, ands, or qualms about it. He would do it, and he loved doing it. He took pride in the fact, pin me, pay me, have boots, we'll travel, you know, he took off, he'd do it. Great guy, too. Anyway, we had this little spot worked out where, you know, I start up, and I said, Larry, just stay there, and I'll work around, you know, headlock, switch, headlock, whatever I was going to do. He knew to stay in the middle of the ring, and then I'd eventually take him down. Then eventually he'd cut me off, and then eventually, you know, I'd come back and win. So I remember it being in this high school gym. I'm on the top of the stairs going out through the locker room. Bullet Bob, who's going to come out and announce the match, who's waiting to go out as well, he's on the middle platform. Larry Santo's at the very bottom of the platform. This is a TV taping, you know, it's probably a couple hundred people there. And we're waiting to go out, and I had this little idea for Larry, you know, to stay in the middle of the ring. I turned to Larry, and I look over around. I said, Larry, forget what I said. Just attack me as soon as I take my ring jacket off. So I hear my music. Boom. I go. I don't know what made me say that. I did it. I go to the ring. He comes out and announces me. Soon I get my jacket halfway down my arms. He attacks me, starts bombing me. Boom, 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 you know. And then I eventually, of course, cut him off and then go over like I was supposed to. I don't know if I didn't want to go over real strong on him like Corny had told me or what it was, but whatever it was, I used bad judgment. I told Larry to attack me. Well, I come through the locker room, and there's Cornette. Oh, my God. He cussed me, Bobby Blaze, God damn you, you son of a mother. He just let me have it, man, right in front of him. He's blasting me. He's going nuts. He's like, you know, you fucker, you was trained by Malenka. You know a fucking million and one wrestling moves, a million and one fucking holds. What? He wasn't doing thousands. He was doing millions. But this time I was a genius because I knew millions of holds, man. And he is cussing me. He's so friggin' red in the face, man. You know, he's redder than that damn jacket he has on. He's cussing me. If he could have reached across and grabbed my neck, I'm sure he would have strangled it. He goes, and then what I felt bad about, not only did I feel bad because I'm getting my ass ripped in front, and this is the first time we had a confrontation. I'm getting my ass ripped in front of all my buddies and friends and plus the guy that's doing TV for us that just may or may not know who I am, has, you know, been a pretty cool guy, laid back most of the time. I'm like getting embarrassed. I was more embarrassed because what Cornette says next is, there's Killer Kyle and Mike Furness standing there, and he looks right at him, and he says, God damn it, I've got Mike Furness over here that don't know one fucking wrestling hold. He don't know shit about this. I got Killer Kyle going out there trying to carry him through a fucking match, Bobby. Now I've got to change all the matches around. He's going nuts because he's got to change the matches around. He starts burying after he buried me, he started burying Mike Furness. He had one fucking move, and he said he hadn't worked yet in that TV taping. He said, I had Kyle going to fucking attack him as soon as he took his ring jacket off, and Kyle was going to carry his fucking ass through a match and then take a pin for me. And now I got a fucking chance. He sent someone, I think he sent Jericho, get your ass out to the ring. He moved like two matches, jumped ahead to move Jericho's match next, or the Storm Seekers, or whoever the fuck it was, Storm Thrillers, or whatever the name was, Pill Takers, I don't know who the fuck they were. Anyway, you get me all worked up here. But anyway, so Cornette just starts ripping her ass after he rips mine. Finally, I just go back to the back toward the shower area, and I Robert Gibson, I went up to him, and I said, Robert, I said, who, you know, oh, shit, I'm in trouble. He saw me sitting there. He knew what happened. He said, he'll forget it, Bobby, just let it go. So anyway, at the end of the night, when it comes time to get paid, like I said, we got paid on Monday, and we done TVs the first Monday of the month. You know, Cornette and I sit kind of talked, and of course he explained to me, and basically what it amounted to, here I was, we're about to have a wrestling match with Larry Santo, you know, and have a good wrestling match, and then actually go over and probably make it about 70-30 and go over strong, and I'm letting a guy attack me. Well, what it was, Furnace didn't know too much at the time, he's green. Kyle was going to attack him, and the very next match would have aired, you know, even with editing, would have aired the next match. So he had two matches basically back-to-back where, you know, a guy gets attacked, you know, if there's ring jacket off, and that's not good for TV. And he just let me know, he's like, you know, I depend on you to wrestle, you know. You needed to wrestle him like you had planned on probably. Don't know what made you do that, but you know better than that. And if you're going to have this freedom, you know, you got to have some responsibility. You know, basically, you knew you was going over. So he calmed down, but I saw that more than once. I saw him and Horner. He'd done the same thing to Horner over something about the ring truck not being there, and it wasn't even Tim Horner's fault. And, you know, just stuff like that. Of course, everyone knows about the infamous Dairy Queen tirade that he went on about the damn, you know, cheeseburgers and, you know, 15-minute wait, and they're not ready and all that. I mean, Courtney could just, the guy, I talked to Cornette, of course, he done the introduction to my book, and he and I have always gotten along. I've always had the utmost respect for him. Like I said, he gave me the first break. But, yeah, I saw him go off a few times, and it's not pretty when he's doing it on you. But out of, you know, over 3.5 years I was there, he went off of me one time. One time I was doing the kendo gimmick, and some people didn't know I'd done that. After Horner left, they gave it to me. I made a couple of towns. I'd done it, got paid decent because I couldn't sell gimmicks. I had to drive a different car. I couldn't, you know, go out and sell gimmicks. I'm under a hood. Well, I had to go to North Carolina. I'd already been in a town 30 minutes from my house. It was no big deal. Went up there and made the town. The next time I was supposed to go up, I'm like, I'm not driving 6 hours. I'm not going to do it. So I didn't go. I'm thinking, you know, hey, I've got heat. I'm going to get fired. So on a Sunday afternoon, this is back when I had caller ID, of course, wasn't a cell phone yet or anything, but I had a caller ID. I see, it's about 1 o'clock on a Sunday, I see the number pop up. I'm thinking, oh, God, it's Cornette. He's going to rip me a new one for no-showing last night, you know. I let it ring probably 3 times, knowing that the recorder's going to pick it up. I'm like, oh, God, I hate this. So I pick up the phone and go, hey, Jimmy, how you doing, brother? I'm sorry about no-show. I started into a promo about how I'm sorry about no-show. He goes, no, Bobby, it's not why I called, brother. He said, listen, you done me a goddamn favor. He said, we had a terrible house last night. You saved me a couple $100. He said, I got a deal for you. He said, taking that kendo gimmick off of you, because I know what I was making. I was making pretty good money using it. He said, you saved me even more money. He said, I'll put that on so-and-so. I'm not going to mention his name. He said, that fucking idiot's going to do it for $50 a night. He said, you're saving me almost $200 a night last time I paid for your trans. He said, so it all worked out. Can you be a TV on Monday? And I'm like, yes, sir. He said, I need you to be there at Bobby Blaze. And I was like, okay, Jimmy, that's great. And that's what he'd done. I was making, at the time I'd done the kendo gimmick, I told him I needed a little bit more money for the gimmicks. And he agreed to help pick up some of my gas expenses. And after about 4 or 5 weeks, I guess about 5 weeks, it just wasn't panning out real good. So he took what I was making, which was about 3 times that, $50, and plus trans, so, you know, you're looking over $200 probably per night. Well, he gave it to someone else that was going to make $50. So I saved about $150 a night, you know, and I came back as myself. And as myself, I was making, you know, my gimmicks, like we mentioned earlier, plus I had a nightly deal. So it all worked out. But, you know, I've seen him go from explosive, from calm to explosive to, hey, it's all good in a matter of minutes, you know. And again, luckily, like I mentioned Sullivan earlier, not, you know, taking liberties with Benoit or vice versa when they had heat, but they did what was best for business at the time. You know, Cornette, he is another one. He would do what was best for the business a lot of times, and he knew what was best at that time, so he would just let it go. You know, he might get hot for a minute, but it'd be over with. So, yeah, I've seen him go off more than a few times. But I have a real good relationship with Jim, and I have a lot of respect for him. I like what he's done for the business. And whether I had worked for him or whether I hadn't, I still would have put Jim Cornette over as far as, you know, talking great, being a good guy to me. And I like what he does. I still listen to some of his shoot interviews. He cracks me up. But the guy's a dadgum nut, you know. But he and I both been from Kentucky. We have that in common. We always, we for the most part got along. I saw him going off with a lot of other people and having a good time, you know, laughing, snickering to myself, thinking, golly, I'm glad that's not me. But, I've seen him, you know. One of the funniest things is, I don't know if you know this or not, Cornette used to get, tell you a couple real quick story, real funny here, I think. He would go to Wendy's and he'd get, at the time, he'd get triple cheeseburgers with triple cheese and extra mayonnaise. And that's what he would order. And then, if he ordered Domino's, he would call Domino's, he'd order a large triple sausage, triple cheese pizza. And I've been in his hotel room before, and he's ordered it, and it's really funny because you know what's coming next. He'll say, yeah, give me a large pizza with triple sausage, triple cheese. Yes, goddammit, I know that. Six fucking hours I'll pay you for it. Just get the fucking pizza here. So he would order these pizzas with, you know, extra sausage, triple, extra cheese, triple. And the first time it happened was at Johnson City in Tennessee. It was in the Days Inn. I started rolling because I heard the next, I'm sure on the other end, the guy was like, well, sir, you know that's going to be six items. And the next words out of Cornette's mouth would be, yes, goddammit, I know that's six fucking items. Just get the pizza here. Now, I heard that probably 100 times, it seemed like. I probably heard it 10 or 15, but you always knew what the other person was saying on the other end of Domino's. He was always saying, you know, sir, you realize that's going to be six items, you know. But, yeah, he'd order those pizzas with triple sauce and triple cheese. And Wendy's, he would order, you know, triple cheese and extra mayonnaise. And I'm thinking, geez, you know. But, of course, now he's lost a lot of weight. He's doing real good. He's healthy again, and that's great. Because I like Jim, and I hate to see him, you know, anything bad happen to him. But, yeah, he used to do some real serious artery clogging back in the day.
Whew, I hear you. Yeah, he seen him in Charlotte at the Fan Fest last August. And, man, yeah, he's the best shape I've ever seen him in.
Yeah. Yeah, I think he's down to like 195 now from up. I think he's up to like 250, 260 pounds. But I talked to him in February, and he's still doing his diet. He's still doing real good, you know. Hopefully that next year I'm gonna try to go to that Fan Fest myself. Well, or later this year, I think it's. I talked to Greg there, and if all goes well, I'm gonna try to be down there myself this year. So maybe we'll hook up down there some.
Yeah, man, because I think you would sell a lot of books there and do really well, and it's a great opportunity to meet with fans and just a really good time, and Cornette's always there, and I'd love to see you there.
I talked to Bobby Fulton, and I think I'm going to try to work out something for me and him to go together. He's up in Chillicothe right above me, and he has to come through here, and we talked a little bit. We've done a couple of appearances together, and so between me talking to him and talking to Cornette, I think I'm going to try to get out of the house and go down there later this year. And I talked to, like I said, I talked to Greg Price there out of Charlotte. And if all goes well, I plan on being there this year. So hopefully we'll hook up down there. So.
Awesome. Looking forward to it. Well, man, I tell you, I could talk to you all day. I've thoroughly
enjoyed the interview.
And I try to keep them to an hour, but we've gone almost an hour and a half. But like I said, and there's still so much we could cover. Hopefully I can have you on again. Maybe if it works out and you are going to be at the Fan Fest, we'll have you on again to promote that. And if not, we'll just have you on to talk and sell some more books. Because like I said,
absolutely.
I've had a great time.
Yeah, let me just say this: it's a real pleasure to be on here. It's a real pleasure speaking with you. Please feel free to hit me up, call me anytime. Thanks for having me on your show. I want all fans out there to know if you're listening to Local Legend Wrestling Radio. Appreciate you, Gene. I appreciate what you've done for the business. And fans, if you're a wrestling fan or if you're one of the boys, and get my book. It's called Pin Me, Pay Me, Have Boots, Will Travel. If you just type in on a computer, Pin Me, Pay Me, it'll usually come up after Pin Me, actually. It's got my ugly mug right there on the front of it. It's a big red cover. You can't miss it. It's on sale right now at Amazon.com. It's $13.50. If you have a Kindle, you can download it for $4.50. If you have a computer or any smartphone or tablet, you can get the Kindle app for free. You can download my book that way. I highly encourage it, not because I wrote it, because I put a lot of good stuff in there for all the boys. I encourage you to buy the book. Like I said, $5 is not going to break you, but it might help build me. And I do the same thing for some of the boys. I'll buy their DVDs. I'll buy their books. I'll buy their pictures. I'll spend $5-7 because I feel it's that important to help build other people up. So always remember out there, fans, support local independent wrestling, support your local independent wrestlers, and dadgummit, buy my book, Pin Me, Pay Me, Have Boots Will Travel. Thank you very much, sir, and to all the good fans of Local Legend Wrestling Radio, see you at the matches, wrestling fans.
Thank you, Bobby. And we're going to include
that link, sir.
Everywhere we post the show up, we're going to include that link to Amazon.com where people can buy your book.
Okay, I'm going to send you, when it's necessary, when we offer you, I'm going to send you a link to it, too, okay?
All right. I appreciate
that link, put it up there. Buddy, I appreciate you. You have a great day. I know you got to do some editing and stuff, and it was a real pleasure, Gene. It really was. I appreciate your time, sir.
I enjoyed it. Take care, man. Bye.
Yes, sir. You take care. Bye-bye.
All right, there he was, Bobby Blaze. I enjoyed that interview. It was a good time. I enjoy most interviews that I do on here, but Bobby was a fun guest and was really forthright with all his answers. And a lot of good advice there. A lot of workers that I hope listen to this show take that to heart. Go back and listen to it again because there was a lot of knowledge dropped there from Bobby Blaze. And I really do. I mean, a lot of times I have guests on, I got to plug what they're doing, but I wholeheartedly mean it when I say I highly recommend Bobby's book. Go check it out. Go to Amazon, order a copy. You'll be glad you did because it's a very entertaining book. Now, let's hit a few plugs here before we go away. Of course, WrestlingNewsCenter.com, our main sponsor here at Locals to Legends Wrestling Radio. Check Wrestling News Center out daily for news stories, results, columns, upcoming events, and much, much more. Everything you need to keep you informed about the world of professional wrestling on a daily basis at WrestlingNewsCenter.com. We're also brought to you by Bomberware. Bomberware, high-quality pro wrestling gear made by Bomber Jack Lord. Tights, trunks, singlets, masks, you name it, and Jack Lord can make it happen for you. Email him at BomberJackLord@gmail.com. Or go on Facebook at facebook.com/BomberJackLord. Even if you can't work like a pro, you can at least look like one. So get in touch with Jack today, and he will make it happen for you. Pro South Wrestling, Piedmont, Alabama. Pro South Wrestling returns this Friday night with the Redemption. It's going to be at 7 p.m. bell time, of course, and doors will open at 627 Southern Avenue, Piedmont, Alabama. Pro South Redemption. The main event is going to be a return Pro South Championship match with the number one contender, Scott Spade, taking on the Pro South Champion, Big Tomb, with yours truly, the king of all wrestling media, Gene Jackson. We're also going to have a big grudge match. It'll be my nephew, Britt Jackson, taking on Total Justice member, the last hero, Ace Haven. And, of course, he will be accompanied by Amy Haven. And we'll also have Pro South Wrestling's first annual Draw to Brawl, which is 16 wrestlers are drawn into four tag team matches at random. The winner of those four tag team matches will advance into an 8-man over-the-top rope battle royal, and the last two men remaining in the ring will be the new tag team champions. So it's a very exciting concept for the fans because literally any combination of these guys involved in this tournament slash battle royal could potentially become tag team champions. So you could have two guys that are friendly that have never paired up together as tag team champions, or you have two guys that hate each other paired up as the new tag team champions. The only two people that will not be drawn at random to at least give the tag team champions a fighting chance of coming out of this with their titles intact will be Chris McCain and Donnie Primetime. They will enter as a team into the tournament. But other than that, everyone else will be, the teams will be drawn at random, and then the winners end up in the battle royal, and the last two remaining people will be tag team champions. Should be exciting. Come out and check it out this Friday night, March 21st, Pro South Redemption. XOW Wrestling returns to the Marshall County Fairgrounds in Holly Springs, Mississippi on Saturday night, March 29th. Going to be an 8 p.m. bell time. They're going to have the Soul Taker, Bad Attitude, Tony Dabbs, Extreme Bret Michaels returns, Chris Styles, Megastar, Memphis Monroe, and many more. There's going to be a big announcement about that show this weekend on Saturday the 22nd, and we will share that with you on next week's episode of Locals and Legends Wrestling Radio. And we want to remind you about the big event coming to Sylacauga, Alabama, Saturday, April the 19th. The League of Extraordinary Wrestlers Thunder Mania will be taking place with a bell time of 6 p.m. at the J. Craig Smith Community Center. The show just keeps getting bigger. More people keep getting added. More matches keep getting added. Keep checking back to the event page on Facebook. This week, I know there was a change in the card where $5 wrestling star Freight Train will now be teaming up with Red Solo Cup to take on the $5 wrestling champion Big Donnie and megastar Memphis Monroe. You got the triple threat match with Action Mike Jackson against Joe Hogan against the Ultimate Dragon. Hollywood Kyle Bakula with Derek Bischoff will be taking on the Kosher Chef. I don't remember the rest of his name. Of course, then the match we talked about on the last episode where you got one half of the Rock and Roll Express, Robert Gibson, taking on Dr. Tom Pritchard. He'll be accompanied by Rock and Roll RPM Alan Martin. Some Chikara stars are being added to the card. Frightmare from the Spectral Envoy will be there. I think they're negotiating Kobold from the Bateri being there. Bullet Bob Armstrong, the WWE Hall of Famer, is going to be there. Caden Sade. Of course, the big tag team gauntlet match for the tag team titles, which will feature eight tag teams with all kinds of people from the Burke County Boys, Hardcore Terry Houston and Pork Chop Cash Jr., Super Brown, Jeff the Hitman Hart, Cowboy Jimmy with Big Country, Cowboy Dusty McWilliams, Cornbread, the Scuffling Hillbillies, the Uber Mention, Otis and Death Row, I don't know if I say that right, but that's as good as I can get. Little Donnie from $5 Wrestling will be a part of that, so that's going to be a huge match. And then in the main event will be a tables, ladders, and chairs match, which will actually unify the IWA Deep South and LXW Intergalactic Championships as Spider Boudreaux versus Angel of Death John Rare versus John Wayne Murdoch versus Josh Crow versus Suicidal Beast Bryant Woods. So be sure you go to lxwwrestling.com. You can get your tickets now. You can find out more info on the event. Go check that out. Tickets are available in advance at a discounted price, so go ahead and get them now. And that does it for this week's episode. Keep checking the Facebook page and back at the Locals and Legends Wrestling Radio page to find out who next week's guest was. Again, I want to thank today's guest, Bobby Blaze, for a great interview, and thank you for listening.
Leaving the stress of his wrestling schedule is through music.
Well, I'm shameless when it comes to loving you. I'll do anything you want me to. I'll do anything at all. And I'm standing here for all the world to see. Oh, baby, that's what's left of me. Don't have very far to fall. You know now I'm not a man who's ever been insecure about the world I've been living in. I don't break easy, I have my pride, but if you need to be satisfied, I'm shameless. Oh, honey, I don't have a prayer. Every time I see you standing there, I go down upon my knees. Changing, swore I'd never compromise. Oh, but you convinced me otherwise. I'd do anything to please. You see, in all my life, I've never found what I couldn't resist, what I couldn't turn down. I could walk away from anyone I ever knew, but I can't walk away from you. I have never let control over me. Work too hard to call my life my own. And I made myself a world and it's worked so perfectly. But it's your world now. I can't.